Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia?
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, got so. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
But the nuclear plants were built in haste.
I can't hear it. I can't hear anything. Hi there. It's Harvey Wasserman. We are here with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, and I'm going to call right back in here.
Fighting wars over oil and gas. No matter who wins, it will not last. The earth is scarred. The planet is warming. Don't you think that all of it's a great big warning?
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia? Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over?
All right, we are in Solartopia here with gun control. We are in the wake of the gut-wrenching massacre, another gut-wrenching massacre, another time around with these ridiculous guns, with our lack of gun control, with our so-called Second Amendment, which is completely misinterpreted all over the world, certainly in the United States. It does not, the Second Amendment does not say that every American has the right, the duty to bear arms, to keep and bear arms. That is not what the Second Amendment says. And I have a piece about this at a number of places, including freepress.org, commondreams.org, and actually just been posted at the Progressive Magazine website. We're joined today by a professor of law at Capital University in Bexley, Ohio, Mark Brown. Mark, are you with us? Mark?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. It's good to hear you, Mark. Mark is a you have a long sounding chair attached to your name. What is that at Capital University?
Oh, it's the Newton Baker and Hostetler Chair. Newton Baker is an interesting, given our discussion, an interesting guy all by himself. He was the Secretary of War for Wilson, Woodrow Wilson.
I see.
Way back when.
Well, and as endowed by a Secretary of War, I think you have a different view of the Second Amendment. But let's start here by again reiterating the lines here are open today. We have a good guest. We have more to talk about than I would ever have dreamed possible. My original idea was today's show would be talking about marijuana and the legalization. We're going to come to that again in other shows, but this one we had to switch gears, and I am outraged almost beyond the ability to speak about what has happened here. If this was the first incident like this in 20 or 30 years, maybe we could say it's time for a dialogue. But like global warming, like nuclear power, we are way, way, like women's rights, you know, like civil rights, like gay marriage, we are way, way, way past the time for a call for a new debate. I was asked by Reverend Jesse Jackson yesterday morning on his radio show what Barack Obama should say in Newtown, and what he should have said was Monday morning, I am proposing legislation aimed at controlling guns in this country. Now, of course, there are those who would say, well, you can't get past the National Rifle Association, you can't get past the Supreme Court, which is just going to rule it out based on the Second Amendment. Americans love their guns too much, and blah, 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 blah. Well, I just Googled gun deaths in Japan. And Professor Brown, do you know how many gun deaths in Japan there were last year?
Probably very few.
How many?
I'd say very few.
Two,
yeah.
There were two gun deaths in a country of well over 100 million people. And, you know, we exceeded that in 20 seconds in Newtown, Connecticut. The New York Times ran the names of these children and their ages. Most of them were 6 or 7 years old. Most of them were shot more than once. The shooter himself was 20 years old, started by killing his mother, who was a gun enthusiast, who had guns all over the house, apparently. And, you know, here we are again. So let's start with the legal bottom line, Professor Brown, at Capital University here in Bexley, Ohio, where I'm also calling from. Tell us, please, the origins and the meaning, in your point of view, of the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States, please.
Well, that's a big question.
Well, we got a lot of time here.
Okay.
We got a full hour.
Well, I really
want to do this thoroughly because people are intimidated by this Second Amendment. Everybody seems to think, or many people
sure.
seem to think, the Second Amendment says you can never control guns. So please tell us what you can.
Well, of course, the Constitution of the United States, drafted in 1787, was not our first founding document. We originally operated under the Articles of Confederation. That got us through the Revolutionary War and a very loose confederation of states. It didn't provide much of a national government, and it didn't work. So the framers got together in Philadelphia and put together this tighter document, the Constitution of the United States, which created a more powerful national government. And that caused concerns amongst the states because, of course, during the Revolutionary War, we were heavily dependent on militias. We also had a Continental Army, but the militias were very important. And the states were wary of giving up control of their militias. And the original Constitution contained language that conceivably would allow the national government to strip the states of their militias. And that's where we get the Second Amendment. Some of the states, Virginia included, expressed concerns. Madison, being a Virginian, was in the first house, and he drafted the Second Amendment. And in my opinion, and this is the dissent in the Heller case, which came out of the Supreme Court, protecting gun rights. And I agree with Stephen, the dissent. And the dissent's point is the Second Amendment is primarily a federalism measure. It's designed to protect the states from the national government. It's not so much designed to protect individuals' rights to do anything.
Well, do you believe that the Second Amendment gives everybody, every individual in the United States, the right to keep and bear arms?
As an absolute measure, no, I don't.
Why not? Well, that's all we hear is that the Second Amendment can't be violated, that everybody has the right to a gun. So how is that not the case?
Well, I mean, first off, just going back, original intent is always hard to divine. Okay, it's not easy, and I still don't think we have the original intent, even with the dissent and the majority's points to this day. But, you know, if I were the decision maker here, I'd say basically this. I'd say that the Second Amendment does prohibit the federal government from stripping gun ownership from most people across the United States. But again, you know, you're talking about adults, you're talking about non-felons, you're talking about people who are competent. So if you're talking about competent adults who have not been convicted of serious crimes, and maybe the Second Amendment prohibits the federal government from stripping them of the possession of, you know, basic handguns, long guns. But that still wouldn't speak to the states. In my opinion, I think the Supreme Court got it wrong in a subsequent case called the McDonald case. But I think that the states, as an original understanding, clearly retained the authority to prohibit all gun ownership, period.
So you're saying an individual state, if it wanted to, could ban guns within the state?
I'm saying as a matter of original understanding, yes. As a matter of Supreme Court precedent, no. Because the Supreme Court, after the Heller case, which came out of the D.C., and handed down in this case called McDonald against the City of Chicago, which incorporated the Second Amendment through the 14th Amendment and applied it to the states. The Bill of Rights originally, Second Amendment included, and this is you know, beyond argument, only applied to the federal government. So the states, if they wanted, they could establish religions, they could ban free speech, they could engage in unreasonable searches and seizures if they wanted to. But that didn't change until the adoption of the 14th Amendment in 1868 following the Civil War. And then after that, the Supreme Court began incorporating, one by one, the Bill of Rights and applying them to the states.
So the Supreme Court did this?
Yeah.
Tell us, please, the nature and the origin of the Heller case. What year was the Heller case?
2008.
So it's very recent.
Yes.
The players on the court, though, are slightly different. Who is gone and who's new?
Souter and Stevens are both gone now. So you've got Sotomayor and Kagan.
All right, so you substituted two male liberals for two female liberals, basically.
Yeah, and the assumption is, and this is a pretty good assumption, that they didn't have to wash.
Okay. Now, the Heller case involved the attempt by Washington, D.C., to ban handguns. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what was the nature of the case, and what did the judges decide?
Well, I mean, the challengers were smart. They picked a very good plaintiff. The plaintiff was a security guard at the Federal Judicial Center who had to carry a gun on the job, but then he couldn't take it home with him. So he is kind of sympathetic, and he lived in the D.C., in the District of Columbia. And the District of Columbia, like some cities, like Chicago, had an absolute ban on handguns and said, well, if you've got them, you've got to make them you've got to disassemble them. I'm not a handgun guy. I'm not a gun guy, so maybe my language isn't exactly right. But you had to disassemble it or otherwise render it inoperative. Long guns, too, you couldn't have those either. And the Supreme Court, 5-4, Scalia wrote the majority opinion. And I tell my students, you know, usual suspects on both sides. You've got the five conservatives, Scalia, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Kennedy on one side. And then you've got the four liberals. And I'm using liberal loosely here because they're really more moderates on the other side. You know, Stevens, Souter, Breyer, and Ginsburg. Supreme Court, 5-4. Says, nope, you know, D.C., you lose. You are basically infringing this right to self-defense that we find in the Second Amendment.
But the word self-defense appears nowhere in the Second Amendment.
No, it doesn't.
The Second Amendment says, basically, the security of the free state, of a free state, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state, of a free state, right? The right to keep and bear of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. I got that mostly right.
Yeah.
Now, here's the question. I did it by heart, but I'm not looking. I can also do the First Amendment by heart. I teach history and cultural pluralism at Capital University, and every one of my classes, we spend a day or two, a class or two, and sometimes three, on the Bill of Rights. Now, most of the time goes to the First Amendment, which is, you know, immensely brilliant and the, as far as I'm concerned, the most important paragraph ever written. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, We're abridging the freedom of speech of the press, of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. If I ever have another child, I will tattoo that on one arm. And I've never spent that much time on the Second Amendment. But I've gone over the Second Amendment, you know, a couple hundred times now. And I just noticed in the last reading of the Second Amendment, which we did this fall, it doesn't say the right of people to keep and bear arms, or the right of citizens, or the right of individuals. It says the right of the people, which is an abstract. And to my mind, there is absolutely no conveyance of any special right of any individual to keep and bear guns. It certainly doesn't say anything about self-defense. And of course, it doesn't say anything about a 20-year-old lunatic walking into an elementary school and multiple shooting 20 kids. So, Professor Mark Brown of Capital University, our guest today, am I reading too much into the fact that it says the people instead of people or instead of individuals?
I think you are, actually. Because there are other references in the Constitution to the people, like in the First Amendment you just quoted, and yet we still draw from that individual protections. So I think that I don't see that as the the crux.
Okay, but you said that the Second Amendment, in your mind, does not guarantee every individual the right to bear guns.
You also mentioned.
You know, this idea of crazy people and incompetent people and so on. So how do we get there from an amendment that has, 20 words in it? How do we get these nuances to restrict gun ownership to various classes of people?
That's hard. You've got basically federal courts making some very hard decisions. First off, the Supreme Court's decision in Heller, which was the first one in 2008, recognized a right to possess a handgun or a long gun in the home, okay, for self-defense. So it didn't extend it to the public. Now there is a case that just came out of Chicago that extends it.
What do you mean extends it? Tell me what you're saying here.
Heller says you've got the right to possess a handgun or a long gun in your home. It doesn't give you the right to take it out. Side. There's no Second Amendment right yet, created by the Supreme Court, to take your gun anywhere else outside the home. It's just a home-based right. But there's a case that just came out of Chicago, the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, just the other day ruled that the Second Amendment right is mobile. It goes with you. So you do have the constitutional right, according to the Seventh Circuit, to take your guns outside the home.
Now, is this even if they're rifles and machine guns and stuff like that?
Well, that's another big issue, because the Supreme Court doesn't resolve that issue in Heller. And no, the Seventh Circuit doesn't resolve that issue in this, I forget the name of the case that just came out. No, I mean, we all rational human beings recognize that the Second Amendment right does not apply to, flamethrowers or bazookas or rocket launchers or, nuclear weapons. So there's got to be a limit to the Second Amendment right. Now, the Heller Court, Scalia says...
Well, wait. Before you jump away from that, where? why would we assume that? Let's play NRA advocate here. Why would, based on what the Second Amendment says, why would we have the right to limit anything?
Good question, and that's exactly what Justice Breyer points out in his dissent in the Heller case. He says, wait a minute, we've got to engage in some balancing, because everyone agrees that there's a limit. And for us to start drawing these lines to establish these limits, we, the court, have to do some balancing, right? So, Breyer's point is, I think, correct, well taken. It's ultimately going to be up to the Supreme Court to start picking and choosing, and it's going to do that. It has to do that. Last we, become absolute NRA fanatics and say that you've got the right to possess any weapon you can create or purchase.
Well, is that what the NRA says? Does the National Rifle Association say that you can have a right to carry any kind of gun?
Oh, I don't know. I cannot speak for the NRA.
As a host seeking balance, I should have had someone on, I suppose, from the NRA. But, you know, they can go on Fox News. They can go on MSNBC, and the so-called balance people. I want to have this show devoted to what we can do about this. We're talking with Mark Brown, a professor of law at Campbell University in Bexley, Ohio, an expert on the Second Amendment. Professor Brown, where did we get this idea, I mean, coming out of the blue here, that there is balance? Why would we presume the Second Amendment, all 20 words of it, why does it give us the right to limit the kinds of guns somebody can carry around?
Well, like I said, that's a good question. One thing is you've got some precedent out there. There was a Supreme Court case that came out in the 30s called the Miller case, I believe, where the Supreme Court recognized the right of the federal government to ban sawed-off shotguns. So,
is that ban still in place?
I'm sure it is, yeah. The question is it constitutional? The Supreme Court, Scalia, in his Heller opinion, was careful to work around that. And he says the Second Amendment was designed to protect the kind of weapon that would be useful to an individual at the time, 1789, 1791, when it was ratified, like a handgun or a long gun. More long gun, because handguns weren't that important, of course, way back when. And he says, of course, there's your line. It has to be some kind of weapon that would be useful to an individual self-defense. And then he distinguishes Miller and says, but, you know, a sawed-off shotgun wouldn't be.
But the Second Amendment only discusses the security of a free state, a well-regulated militia. And where does self-defense come in? It's not part of it. What as far as I can read, and
well, here's where Scalia gets it, and it's a good point. Scalia says there was a common law right to self-defense, and then, you know, 1787 we get this new Constitution ratified, 1789, and then we get this Bill of Rights added in 1791. The Second Amendment, he says, recognizes that right, common law right, to self-defense. The Second Amendment recognizes the existing militia. So the Second Amendment, the Constitution, doesn't create the militia. It embraces whatever militia was out there, and kind of implicit with that militia was self-defense, which was recognized as common law.
Common law coming from Britain.
Yes.
And so what you're saying is there was judicial precedent for people retaining weapons, one way or the other, to defend themselves.
Yeah, actually quite a bit of British precedent. Going beyond even judicial precedent, Scalia cites some British documents that recognize, you know, the right to bear arms. And so historically, I think we have to recognize the fact that weapons were extremely important, you know, 200-plus years ago. To survival, that's all there is to it, sure.
But, we're talking with Mark Brown, a professor of law at Capital University, and I am trying to figure out here how an informed public can proceed to make sure that something like this never happens again. What would you suggest, Professor Brown?
You're asking me hard questions here, Harvey. I'm not a policymaker. I'm a con law guy.
Some precedent here in the United States of limiting gun ownership. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah, for a long time. Sure.
And what is the nature of that limit? What's involved with limiting that gun ownership?
Well, I mean,
legally, what can we duplicate here? What can we replicate on a national basis that would allow us to get at preventing something like this from happening again?
Well, I mean, as it stands, the stumbling block is Heller, the Heller case.
And that's a new case.
I'm sorry?
And that's a new case. It's only from 2008.
Exactly, because it was quite a change in constitutional law. Until 2008, you know, all through the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, we con law people recognized that there really wasn't a Second Amendment limit. on what the government, whether it's state or federal, could do. That right now is it's a novel, it's a modern invention. And I think it largely comes from the NRA. I think the NRA is just a marvelous propaganda machine. That's all there is to it.
Well, has there been a noticeable jump in gun ownership since the Heller decision?
Now, that I don't know. I do not know.
Okay, so what you're saying is prior to 2008, just 4 years ago, there was extensive gun control legislation on the books that was upheld in the country, in the United States?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Lots and lots of it. And there still is. I mean, the question is whether it's valid. But there still is extensive regulation. I mean, if you go from city to city, you're going to find cities that have perhaps unconstitutional restrictions, but they're of ancient origin. Ancient going back 100 years, I mean.
Well, prior to Heller, what was the law? A state or, well, could the federal government prevent people from owning handguns, for example?
Yes. Before Heller, yes.
And what about automatic weapons?
Sure. There still is a federal ban on certain, you know, kinds of automatic weapons.
But there was an automatic weapons ban that lapsed during the Bush years, isn't that correct?
No, that I don't know. I have to look that one up.
Okay, so basically what we have then is a mishmash, and what's happened since 2008 is basically by a 5-4 decision, like Bush v. Gore, and some other decisions that have come down from the court.
It was the same split, by the way, 5-4.
What's that?
Bush against Gore and the Heller case with the
exact
same
split. Well,
no, but
Sandra Day O'Connor was gone when the Heller case came, is that correct, or was she on the Heller case?
Yeah, no, you're right. She was gone. That was the difference.
And she had been replaced by Alito.
Yes.
Scalia Jr., apparently. So until the Heller case came along and said that anybody can own any kind of gun and the city can't stop them, there were substantial laws on the books.
Well, let me just, even after Heller, it's not that you can own any kind of gun. Instead, the Heller case is limited to handguns and long guns. Long guns that kind of are modern equivalents of muskets. So Heller does not extend to machine guns, automatic, repeating automatic weapons. The Heller court's very careful about that. Scalia's very careful about that. No bazookas.
Is that explicit in the decision that they do allow the government to limit automatic weapons?
Yeah. I have to look it up. I've got the case here in front of me, but I can find you the exact language.
All right. Well, that's a little bit reassuring. So, but not very much. So, how did this kid in Connecticut get a hold of the guns? He went into the school with three guns, apparently. They were apparently owned by his mother, who he shot first, God forbid, and took the guns apparently with tons of ammunition. I guess he put on a flak jacket of some kind. Is that correct? And went down to the school where she taught, into her classroom apparently, and shot her students. So how did she come to own all these guns? Was it legal for her to own all these guns?
From what I understand from the news reports, and this is not firsthand, but I think they were all legally possessed.
They were all legally owned? She had permits for all these guns?
Well, that's what I've read. And again, this is all secondhand.
Well, it's still pretty foggy, so I'm putting you on the spot wrongly to a certain extent. But apparently what she had was fully legal.
That's my understanding.
Okay. We're talking with Professor Mark Brown. We're going to take a short break. Come back, go into deeper detail here on how gun control works in other countries and what we need to do in this one. We're going to talk about what Barack Obama said in Newtown, Connecticut. I guess it was yesterday. He said we can't tolerate this anymore, but where is the legislation? So we will run our Silvertopia song, where we do have gun control, and we'll be right back after a short break. We'll be right back.
new plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam.
We are back with Professor Mark Brown at Capital University in Bexley, Ohio, talking about gun control. I want to read this account of what happened in Newtown. A 20-year-old, Adam Lanza, used a semi-automatic Bushmaster assault rifle, similar to the M4 carbine used by the U.S. military. He also had two handguns, a Glock 9mm semi-automatic pistol, and an SIG Sauer, S-A-U-E-R. The massacre occurred just miles from the National Shooting Sports Foundation, the nation's second most powerful pro-gun lobby in the country after the National Rifle Association. What is a SIG Sauer? Do you have any idea, Professor Mark Brown?
You got me.
Okay, so the Glock I've heard of, I've actually seen one. And a 9mm semi-automatic pistol, and a semi-automatic Bushmaster assault rifle. Now, are these bannable under the law? Were they banned? Were they legal in Connecticut?
No, I cannot speak to Connecticut law. Here, I can read you the language in Scalia's opinion. Okay,
let's hear it.
Here's what he says. The Miller case, which I described earlier, you know, involving sawed-off shotguns, said, as we've explained, that the sorts of weapons protected were those in common use at the time, common use back in 1789. It may be objected that if weapons that are most useful in military service, M16 rifles and the like, may be banned. Okay? And then he goes on, but that doesn't mean we can't protect the common use weapons. So Scalia, in his opinion, he says, yeah, you can ban M16 rifles, okay? But that doesn't mean you can ban handguns and other long guns.
Based on what? I mean, what is the basis for saying we can't ban these guns?
Well, according to Scalia, it's all the Second Amendment. I mean, there's a lot of judicial activism going on there.
Well, I find it very, very difficult to believe that the Constitution allows for this. When we started the show, you were going to discuss the origin of the Second Amendment. Maybe we need to do that, Mark Brown. Can you tell us how did the Second Amendment come about, and what did James Madison intend with the Second Amendment? What were the politics of the situation that brought us the Second Amendment?
Well, you had to convince, you know, if you're Madison and the other Hamilton and the other framers, you had to convince the states to ratify this document, this original 1787 Constitution. And there was some salesmanship involved. The states were concerned. They had lived under the Articles of Confederation, which did not create a strong national government. And they kind of liked having their own powers, so one of the selling points was, okay, we'll give you a Bill of Rights. And when it's all said and done, you know, you ratify this Constitution, and then we'll give you a Bill of Rights. So that was the deal. One of the Bill of Rights was the Second Amendment. The states were concerned about a lot of different things. And one of the things they were concerned about was their militias. So the Second Amendment was part of the deal. Can you hold on 1 second, Arthur?
Sure. I'm going to go ahead. I hear a dog barking in the background. I'm going to read what President Barack Obama said in Newtown at the, I guess it was a funeral. No problem.
The dog.
Okay. I assume you heard or read what the president said at Newtown. I guess it was was it today or yesterday that he gave this speech? What's that?
Was it yesterday?
Was it yesterday about you know, what happened there? And he vowed action. Let's see, if I have a transcript here, which I'm looking up online as we speak here. Sorry, I had it in front of me and then it disappeared. Professor Brown, what is your opinion of what Barack Obama has said here about, he said basically we can't tolerate this anymore. And, but he has not laid out, here we go. We can't tolerate this anymore. These tragedies must end. And to end them, we must change. I don't know what that means exactly. We didn't know what it means when he ran on that in 2004. And we don't know what it means now. Are we really prepared to say that we're powerless in the face of such carnage, that the politics are too hard? Are we prepared to say that such violence visited on our children year after year after year is somehow the price of freedom? All right, that's reasonable. But he has not put forward any specific legislation. Are you aware of any?
No, not that I've seen. I think it's all, you know, very formative right now.
Well, but who's forming? I've seen, the New York Times today says that a couple of Democratic senators have come around who otherwise have supported gun control. We don't see any Republican senators coming around. Their story says here some Democrats, some unlikely Democrats, join in the push for new gun laws. And they're citing Senator Joe Manchin III, who was governor of West Virginia, now senator, who said that everything should be on the table as gun control is debated in the coming weeks and months. John Yarmuth, a moderate Democrat from Kentucky, said he finally felt compelled to speak out on an issue that's been untouchable for many elected officials. He said, I've been largely silent on the issue of gun violence over the past 6 years. And I'm now as sorry for that as I am for what happened to the families who lost so much in the most recent but sadly not isolated tragedy. The National Rifle Association has spent untold millions of dollars instilling fear in our citizens and our politicians. I believe it is more rational to fear guns far more than the illusory political power of the NRA. Senator Mark Warner, U.S. Senator Mark Warner, a powerful figure, senator from Virginia, says the episode was a game changer. And the NRA has been silent. Its homepage contained a blog post from November 22nd saying guns, more guns, less crime in Virginia. This is an argument that we keep hearing that if everybody had a gun, if more people had guns, they could, and then a shooter came up, they could whip out their guns and shoot the shooter. Is there any legal ramification for this? Have you heard anything about this, Professor Brown?
About arming the
public. Well, let's talk specifically about here in Ohio. The headline yesterday in the Columbus Dispatch, or the day before, the day of the shooting, was that the gun laws in Ohio have been loosened to allow more gun ownership and more gun deployment. That we in Ohio here have a concealed carry law where anybody can walk around with a gun hidden from the public and you don't know. So if you're going to have an argument with somebody, they can just whip out a gun and blow you away. And that's legal under the law. Well, not blowing you away, I suppose, but carrying a gun that's concealed and can be whipped out under any kind of circumstance is legal in Ohio. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not an expert on Ohio law, but I think the gist is right that it is in Ohio. You can get a permit, you can carry a concealed weapon. Yes.
And what has concealed weapon carry been gone to the Supreme Court? Has that been upheld explicitly by the Supreme Court?
No, not yet. That's what we find in that Seventh Circuit case that I mentioned earlier. And
the one from Chicago.
I'm sorry.
From Chicago.
Yeah, it came out of Chicago. Yes. And that one's probably going to go to the Supreme Court.
Are you expecting another 5-4 decision against gun regulation? Do you think that the U.S. Supreme Court, this U.S. Supreme Court, will vote 5-4 to say it's okay that it's protected by the Second Amendment to walk around carrying a gun that's concealed?
I don't know. It's that's a trickier one because, again, you know, the Heller Court only said in the home. So it's a stretch. I mean, you're pushing it to say now you've got the right to, you know, deport that weapon.
All right. Well, let's get this clear. This new case, does it have a name?
It does have a name, and I don't have it in front of me. I was looking for it. I couldn't find it.
Okay, so this
I can tell you
case,
who wrote the opinion, though. Judge Posner wrote the opinion.
And of the Midwestern Circuit Court there, the Seventh Circuit.
And the interesting thing about Posner was after the Posner's a very well-known jurist throughout the United States. He's very well-written. He's a smart guy. He's also Republican, very conservative. But after the Heller case came down, Posner criticized the outcome. And so now here he is, as a judge, he says, well, I've got to apply Heller, and I don't see any logical distinction between, the house and the driveway. So, if you've got the right to possess a gun in the home for self-defense, you've got the right to carry it around with you, too. And
when will this go to the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, they haven't petitioned yet. I think they're probably going to ask for a rehearing first in the Court of Appeals. I can see it within a year.
Who is they? Who's brought this case?
Who was the individual? Of course, they sued the Illinois Attorney General. It was Illinois.
So the state of Illinois imposed this law.
Yes.
And now, a gun enthusiast or a gun supporter has challenged the right of the state of Illinois to enforce it. Is that correct?
Exactly. It's very rare for a state to have a statewide ban. Illinois was the last state that had a statewide ban. Instead, most of the bans you find are local, city bans. So Illinois was the last state, and now it's gone.
Wow. You mean there's only one state in the United States that bans guns?
Yeah, that's Illinois. But what you find is the NRA politically is, again, it's just been a juggernaut. The legal landscape in the last 20, 30 years, the gun ownership landscape, has changed dramatically politically.
Well, how can you characterize that? What you're saying now, what happens, and this is important as a historian and as someone who teaches in colleges, is that people take the present and they assume that it's the norm. Teaching college when George W. Bush was president was a bizarre experience because, as someone myself who was born in 1945, I remembered what was normal until Bush came along. But my students all assumed that George W. Bush was the way it always was, that we always had a president who was illiterate and who, wanted no separation of church and state and loved going into foreign wars, and that was how things were with the president. And, of course, now they've seen Barack Obama, things are a little different, and there's a whole other culture involved. But everyone in this generation also assumes that the gun lobby has always been a powerful force in politics. And what you're saying here, which is very important, is that it's a new phenomenon in the last 30 or so years. Is that correct? Do I understand you right on that?
Well, it's a much more powerful lobby than it was 30, 40 years ago. Yeah.
And what's made it so powerful?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, one is money, of course. Money is extremely important. They're very well organized. So organization, money. I can't give you much more, I guess.
Okay, well, we must have millions and millions of people in this country who own and love their guns. Now, yeah. I had a debate, an impromptu debate at the where I work out the other day, about a guy running around saying, well, someone killed three people with a crossbow. Does that mean we should ban crossbows? And, thankfully he was running around in a towel without his concealed weapon, I suppose. But prior to the last 30 years, are you saying that there was not as powerful a gun lobby as we have now?
Yeah. The gun lobby now is much more powerful.
And what is the root of its power? Is it its ability to give people political donations?
That's a large part of it, yeah. Money is extremely important.
So then the question becomes, how do we fight these guys? And how do we win in gun control laws? Now,
one thing that can be done is, again, the Heller Court, the Supreme Court's opinion, does not give a blank check to own any and all weapons. So one thing that we can do legally still is ban certainly automatic weapons. And the harder question is the semi-automatic stuff, but I think you can try at least.
Well, I saw you selling in India, but what's the difference between an automatic weapon and a semi-automatic weapon?
Well, my understanding is the automatic weapon, if you pull the trigger, it will continue to shoot. It's like a machine gun. But the semi-automatic is you've got to keep pulling the trigger, and then it'll keep popping.
Well, that's a horrifying image.
But I don't think in practice there's really that much of a difference.
Well, you know, it's hard for me to envision anybody with that kind of gun in a room full of children, but that's what we've just had happen here. We're talking with Mark Brown. He's the professor of law at Capital University in Bexley, Ohio, an expert on the Second Amendment. And so I want to go back to James Madison here. And because to my mind, and the reason I wrote this piece, which is posted around the internet now, the Second Amendment does not condone random slaughter, is the title of it. It's at the Progressive Magazine's website. It's at freepress.org, commondreams.org, and other places. And basically it points out that the original intent of the Second Amendment, and the reason the Second Amendment is so important to me is because as an academic and someone who follows the law, the Second Amendment is always used as an excuse to say hands off the guns, and that the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, guarantees everyone the right to own any kind of gun that they want to, and clearly this was not the intent, and clearly it's not the law. Now, what Professor Brown, you're saying is that there is legal precedent, there are laws on the books that limit the type of gun you can own, and that these have been upheld by the Supreme Court. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so the guns that were used, the semi-automatic weapons that were used in Newtown by this 20-year-old kid who shot all these children, you would have to have a permit for that. Is that correct?
Again, I'm not an expert on Connecticut law, so I'm not sure exactly what.
But under Connecticut law, they could have required him to have a permit.
Probably.
That would have been upheld by the courts. If a state or a municipality wants to say you can't own a semi-automatic weapon, despite the presence of the Second Amendment, that could be upheld.
Oh, yeah. Even in the Heller case, the Supreme Court recognizes that you can still permit weapons. So you can still license them. I mean, it's not complete anarchy out there yet.
Well, it sure seems that way. I mean, you know, we have had multiple shootings in schools, in the theater in Aurora, Colorado, which was less than a year ago. We had it in Columbine, Colorado, which was, you know, the subject of Michael Moore's film, Bowling for Columbine. It's hard to, you know, rack up and remember all the mass shootings we have. The first one that comes to my mind was in the 1960s, I believe. There was a guy named Charles Whitman who went up a tower at the University of Texas and started picking people off like a sniper. People were horrified by that and, of course, vowed to control guns. Medgar Evers was shot. John F. Kennedy, the President of the United States, was shot. Martin Luther King was shot. Malcolm X was shot. Robert F. Kennedy was shot. John Lennon was shot. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And yet nothing gets done. And so now we're in a moment here where people are outraged, they're rallying, the pictures of the children are proliferating in newspapers and through the internet, their names have been published on the front page of the New York Times, along with their ages, and yet people have this sense that, you know, this nagging, depressing gut sense that, once again, nothing's gonna happen. I mean, is that your sense, Professor Brown, or do you see that we could possibly make some strides here?
Well, again, society does have the right to limit weapons, even notwithstanding the Second Amendment, okay? Because the Second Amendment right, so far, is a fairly limited right. From what the Supreme Court has told us, right to possess a weapon for self-defense in the home. But what's happened, and this again takes back 20, 30, 40 years over the last couple of generations, is politically, our elected leaders have not had the spine to do it. I mean, weapon possession has become much more prevalent throughout the United States because we keep repealing the laws, we keep watering down the laws, and you really can't blame the Supreme Court for that one. That's the fault of the people we put in office.
Well, yeah, I do blame the Supreme Court because, frankly, the idea that these laws, especially the Heller case, with the law where Washington D.C. is trying to regulate handguns, the idea that that could be upheld under the auspices of the Second Amendment. I mean, am I wrong in saying that James Madison would flip in his grave over that interpretation of what he wrote?
Well, Harvey, that's a hard one too. It's always hard to figure out what the framers intended, Madison included, because we've only got snippets. We don't have enough information. I always tell my students in my con law class, it's constitutional interpretation is a three-step process. The first one is text, but that usually doesn't help much. So then you go to the original intent, all because the Constitution's framed in such vague general language. You know, it can help you sometimes, but usually you're going to move on. And the second question you're going to ask is, what was the original intent? Well, again, you know, with the 1787 convention, we just don't have any records. We've got some notes. We've got Madison's notes. We only, best account has it, we've got one out of every 10 words. So we've only got 10% there. Now, with the Bill of Rights, we're fortunate because we do have some more. We have more records because the House, anyway, was open. So we do have the annals of the House. But then, you know, even then, the original intent usually doesn't provide us an answer. So what we wind up going to is policy, and that's where most of the Supreme Court's decisions are made. The Supreme Court is a policy-making institution. That's all there is to it.
And when did the public start to try and legislate restrictions on gun ownership?
When?
When did we start getting gun laws?
I am not sure of exact date, but if you go back to the Wild Wild West, there were gun restrictions. You know, you watch the famous movie Unforgiven and Big Whiskey. You got to check your guns, you know, with the sheriff as you come into town. So
if you came into town in a western town, you could Tombstone or Abilene, Wichita, they would take your gun, or they could.
I'm not sure they did, but I think there were towns that did.
Okay. Well, we're actually getting close to the end here, and what I got to speak my piece. This is why I get to get a radio show. This is enough is enough, and if we let this opportunity go by, if Barack Obama goes out and gives a vague speech once again about how this can't go on, this has got to change, and we do nothing about it, then, you know, we are really not a nation worth preserving. I mean, I've looked here at the listing of countries, you know, that suffer gun violence, and the United States is pretty much off the charts. There are places where gun violence is, you know, worse, but not very many. And the so-called civilized world, all the countries of Europe do a better job of controlling their guns than we do. I mean, the countries that have worse gun violence to us are South Africa, Philippines, Mexico, Panama, Brazil, Colombia, Swaziland, Guatemala, Honduras, Jamaica, and at the top of the list is El Salvador. But after that is the United States. We have, according to this, we have 9 firearm-related deaths per year with guns, and the after that, everybody is better. So, of 180 countries in the world or so, we are really in the top tier. And you look at Chile, Azerbaijan, for God's sakes, Japan, South Korea, Qatar, Mauritius, Hong Kong. These countries have virtually no gun deaths. The United Kingdom, which is arguably certainly as free as we are, the Netherlands, Spain, these countries all have minuscule gun deaths compared to us. It's completely out of control, and we have got to do something about it. Professor Mark Brown from Capital University, thank you very much. I am not wringing my hands over this. We are going to make some changes in this country. And Professor Brown, I hope you'll have some more laws and some more Supreme Court precedents to talk about next time you're on the radio. Thank you very much for being with us. It was greatly appreciated.
My pleasure, Harvey. Take care.
Okay, folks, let's go out there and let's win this. We've shut down nuclear plants. We've made great strides in civil rights, civil liberties. I don't want to have to do another show about another slaughter of small children in a town in this country ever again. There is no excuse for it. It's time to make this change, and to hell with the National Rifle Association. We will see you next week on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high. And so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gone?